welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight in studio, we have Aaron Avery and Chris Mahurin. Newlyweds as of February
10th.
Wow. Welcome you two to the show.
Thank you so much for having us. We're looking forward to speaking with you and letting you into our lives a little bit.
Aaron, you want to say hello?
Hello, everybody.
Anyways, I met Chris at the LGBTQ++ Bowling League, and you were just a pleasure, and you're such a dynamite bowler, and the energy that we both had, at the, you know, that we both have when we're bowling is just so, so magic and just fun. And so I met Chris, and I liked him so much, and all his bowling buddies, and I hope they're out there listening, Jeremy and Steven and Sean. But I met Aaron, and Chris introduced me to Aaron and told me that you both were getting married in February, and I had to ask the big question, will you come on our show and be our guest? And here you are. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you on the show. And just for everybody's interest, Aaron is an attorney and Chris is a police officer. So they will be sharing their lives with us. And we're going to find out more about them and their talents and their passions besides bowling. Aaron doesn't bowl, I guess. That's what I understand, right? But what do you love?
Cheer section.
Cheer section. That's what I do, too. In fact, I'll be there next Tuesday night cheering them on. So anyway, but first, before we get there, we have news and events with our friend and Outbeat member and our engineer, Greg Moralia.
I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of April 1st, 2018. The Tourism Board of Puerto Vallarta and the LGBT Business and Tourism Association released a lengthy statement about last weekend's attack on a gay man and his husband. Carl Blee and Mark Lange, two Palm Springs realtors who own a condominium in Puerto Vallarta, were walking home from a nightclub early Sunday. A man yelled at the couple, who were holding hands, and then shot them. Blee, who is a military veteran, was hit in the thigh and is still unable to walk. The couple says Puerto Vallarta media and authorities portrayed the shooting as a robbery gone bad, but the men say it was clear it was a hate crime. The shooter who got away never approached the men or demanded money. According to the Tourism Association, Puerto Vallarta remains one of the safest destinations for LGBTQ visitors, not only in Mexico, but on an international level. These types of incidents are rare and extremely isolated. They said last year more than 17,000 LGBTQ international visitors came to Puerto Vallarta for Pride without incident, and it's estimated that in general, about 20% of the visitors to Puerto Vallarta, specifically in the city's romantic zone, are part of the LGBTQ community and safely enjoy the destination without incident. In a statement, the association said, quote, our sympathies are with Carl Blee and Mark Lange, and we hope they will continue to return to Puerto Vallarta. And rest assured, we are working with authorities to make our home always a better place. And in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Amy Tyree Berryman, 28 years old, has been the seventh known transgender person to be killed in the United States this year. Police arrived at the Shades Motel early Monday morning and found Berryman suffering from a gunshot wound. She died at the scene. Berryman is preceded by the death of Felicia Mitchell, who was shot and killed in Cleveland, Zachariah Fry, whose body was discovered outside of Santa Fe, Tanya Harvey, who was shot and killed in Buffalo, Celine Walker, who was shot and killed in Jacksonville, Vicky Gutierrez, who was trapped inside her burning apartment, and Krista Lee Steele, who was bludgeoned and stabbed in her home. If the violence against transgender people continues at this rate, 2018 would be the deadliest for the community. And finally, here locally, the Sonoma County Department of Health Services is concerned about an outbreak of syphilis, especially with men who have sex with men and everyone in the homeless community. Syphilis is treated easily, but if left to fester, it can result in a debilitating condition and even death. Getting tested for syphilis is easy and free during a special event coming up this week. The Sonoma County Department of Health Services is partnering with Face-to-Face Sonoma County AIDS Network to provide free syphilis testing and treatment this week on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 12 noon to 4:30 p.m. at the Face-to-Face office, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. You can drop in during these hours and get tested and treated for syphilis, and while you're at it, get tested for HIV and hepatitis. It's all free, and you can learn more at ftf.org. For a calendar of LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
Hello, everybody. If you just joined us, this is Living Proof. I'm Sheridan, and next to me is Diana, my wife of, well, we've been together 40 years, but my wife of, 2011.
No.
I don't know.
No bragging on this
Whatever.
Young couple here.
Okay. Well, anyway, we are in studio with Chris Mahirin and Aaron Avery. Welcome back. Hello,
Hi.
Both of you.
Thanks for having us.
So let's start the interview with you, Chris. I know you so well. No,
yes.
I don't know much about you at all, but I know you're a hell of a bowler. I mean, I know you love to bowl and you're a great bowler, but anyways, yeah, tell us a little bit more about you because you've been sharing a little bit during the break. So I want to know and let the audience get to know what you're all about because you're a man of many talents.
Thank you. You're too kind. Yeah, I grew up in Petaluma. It's where my family, most of it still is now. And when we were kids, there's not much to do in Petaluma but go bowling. So it's kind of nice to be able to bring my childhood passion, I guess, which is a weird passion to have, but it's Petaluma, so that's what you do. To now being able to do it in an LGBT bowling league. So that's been a lot of fun. I started working for Santa Rosa Police in 2006. I was their first openly gay male patrol officer to start in that agency. I've been there now almost 12 years. And I worked as a patrol officer initially when I got started. From there, I became a detective. I worked in domestic violence and sexual assault cases for about 5 years. I'm on the hostage negotiation team. I did some dispatching to help out for a while as well. I do translation services through the department when those are needed. And then Christmas in 2016, I got promoted to sergeant. So now I currently work Friday, Saturday, Sundays from 6 p.m. to 7 at night. Excuse me, 6 p.m. to 7 in the morning. So it's been a long, fun career so far, but it continues on. Lots more years to go.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Translation services?
So I speak Spanish, and so there's not a whole lot of officers. We're getting more and more diverse with that as well, which is nice. But over the years, I've been able to work on some pretty awesome cases as a translator. So that's been a lot of fun to learn new skills and then meet people that I wouldn't have gotten to meet without that skill.
Uh-huh. Is that something you took up Spanish speaking later on, or did you learn it like in high school?
No, I was nosy. So it's an old dated reference, but I was in Blockbuster when I was like 13 and had to pick a, what do you call those classes, an extra class for high school when you're getting to start. And there was some people, an elective.
Oh, yeah.
And there were people in front of me who were speaking Spanish, and I couldn't understand, and I was nosy and wanted to know. So I thought, that's probably a good thing to try. And so I tried it and loved it and lived in Mexico for a total of about a year. And total of all times, the longest duration was about 6 months. So trying to get that skill, and now I get to do it in the community, which is a lot of fun. So.
One would look at you and not know. It's a stereotype, I know. I'm guilty, but one would look at you and not know that you spoke Spanish.
Yeah, redhead isn't commonly known to probably speak Spanish. So
it's fantastic.
It is pretty helpful when people are talking around you and they don't know you understand. So
yeah.
It's actually a fun little thing.
I bet you catch. That's some stories you have.
Right,
I bet.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Cool.
That's good.
Well, thank you. I mean, there's more we can, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Once you think of something else. You can share later, but let's check in with Aaron. What about you, Aaron?
So I'm from a small city outside of Sacramento called Rocklin. It used to be much smaller than it is today. When I lived there, it was about maybe 15, 20,000 people. And it's sort of halfway between Sacramento and Auburn. And grew up there, went to high school there, and went to college in Santa Clara, went to Santa Clara University. Graduated in 2003 and moved back to Sacramento, went to law school in Sacramento at McGeorge School of Law, which is University of the Pacific's campus is in Sacramento for their law school. Graduated in 2006, and I've been practicing in Sacramento since then. So I've been at the same firm since 2006, and I'm a partner. The oldest law firm in Sacramento. We're 122 years old, 122 years young. And what, about a year and a half ago, Chris and I moved to Sonoma together. He was living in Santa Rosa at the time, and I was living in Sacramento in Midtown. And we picked a city that neither one of us had ever lived in before, but it really just spoke to us. We had already met a lot of people there that we really connected with, and it just seemed like a great community for us where we could both keep our jobs, because I still work in Sacramento and he's got his career in Santa Rosa, so we picked a spot in the middle.
Are you openly gay
at work?
Yeah.
Yes, I'll say yes. I haven't had an explicit conversation about it with every single person I work with. But I would say about 80, I'm out to about 80% of my partners and our associate. So I would say yes.
So once they see that beautiful wedding picture that you showed us earlier on the desk, and then, no, I'm just teasing. So tell us about how you two met.
We have like very different stories about it, but for radio, we'll keep the tamer version of it.
I want to hear both versions. Seriously.
Let's just say my version is right and Chris's is wrong.
No, I have a good friend who works up in Sacramento and lives in Sacramento. And so I was spending a lot of time up there going back and forth on my days off of work. And so he invited me for happy hour on a Friday night. And I was like, well, everyone knows driving to Sacramento on a Friday night is not pleasant. So I'm like, well, I'm not going to come up for a happy hour. And he's like, no, come up, it'll be fun. And I was like, no, I don't want to be in traffic. And he's like, it'll be good, don't worry about it, come up. I'm like, all right. So I get in the car, and of course it's 3 hours worth of traffic from Santa Rosa to Sacramento on a Friday night in February. And so on my way up there, I called a friend of mine and was telling her I'd been single for a little while at that point and was really interested in finding somebody else that was more than just dating. And I remember going through this long laundry list of things, even a height requirement, which lovely Aaron met. But it was this laundry list of things that just seemed too long at one point. And my girlfriend was like, no, it's not. It's like, find what you want, enjoy what you want, and don't give up until you find what you want.
Nice.
And so me and my friend Jeff went out to go have a cocktail, and we walk into a bar, and I see Aaron surrounded by a group of other men, and I was like, oh, well, I'm clearly not his type. So we walked over there anyways, and we started talking. We talked for, I remember it being about 20 minutes or so. I thought he was cute and was going to keep talking to him all night, but after 20 minutes, he's like, oh, can you excuse me? I have to go to the bathroom. And I was like, oh, okay. So he leaves, and I felt like 20 minutes went by, and I'm talking to my friend Jeff, and I'm like, well, I guess the cute guy's not coming back anymore. Well, it wasn't until years later I just found out he was pee shy. It just took him a long time in a public bar, so then he finally came back. Sorry, I'm going to pay for that one later.
Yes, definitely.
But we ended up talking all night, and it was a good thing. We had drinks and then met for brunch the next morning, and then met for brunch the next morning after that as well. So it was 3 dates in a row kind of a thing, so it was very enjoyable, and that's my version of how we met.
Mine's basically the same as that version.
But yours is right, though.
But mine is right still.
So let's hear the correct
version. So that's mostly right. So what Chris left out is that his friend Jeff, who he was in Sacramento to visit, was actually a mutual friend. I think we talked about it a little bit after we met that it was really remarkable that we had never met each other before because we had so many friends in common. Mm-hmm. And even though we were living in different cities, you were coming to Sacramento quite a lot. And we just had never run into each other. And so I like to think it was destiny. I think we were fated to run into each other eventually, whether it was that night or some other night. It was going to happen.
Mm, how sweet.
Yeah.
I would like to know a little bit more about that list. Can you name off some of those things?
Yeah. For me.
He's so serious.
No. For me, it was like the physical side of it was never like a huge part of it. I got lucky on that part. But
he's turning red. He's Aaron.
A big part of it for me was somebody who was established in a career, someone who had their own life that I could participate in, but would participate in mine. A big interest of mine is giving back in community work. And so there are a lot of different elements of that that I like to be part of. And so I want someone who wants to come to events with me. And sometimes they are just a significant other, but other times they're socializing as well and networking in those environments as well. But I also wanted someone who had their own events in their life and something that I could be the supportive person for in that role and being there as well. So I wanted someone like that, and Aaron met all of those kind of requirements as well. So those were enjoyable things that you just don't really have very often, and trying to find that with somebody was difficult. I'm a big fan of us doing the majority of our lives together, but we are still independent people, and so I like somebody who has their own interests as well. And Aaron definitely has his own interests, but yet I get to participate in them with him, and he participates in my interests with me. So that was a really big part of that list, with things like that.
And what was the height requirement?
5'6" to 5'8". No. And he's like 5'7¾". He told me.
I made it.
No. It was like 5'6" and above. It was fine. But yeah.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see and watch both of you. I can tell the love is there. It's really sweet and special. Yeah.
So how long did you know each other before you started dating exclusively? And then how long did you date before you decided to get married?
Well, I can answer the second question because I can remember that a little better. So I think we were together about 4 years before we got engaged. We got engaged last summer, last July.
Yeah.
And Chris proposed to me.
He
surprised me, and I'm not easily surprised, but there's an event out in Sonoma called Gay Wine Weekend that we've been to for a number of years, and we're friends with a couple of the people that run it, and Chris had coordinated behind the scenes with one of them to stage this big group picture that I thought was just a group picture, but really the photographer had the ring in his pocket, and I was totally shocked, and I don't surprise easily and I don't cry easily, and both of those things you accomplished that day.
So you had a big group picture, and then what happened?
Well, then the photographer said, "Oh, well, I want to get individual couple pictures." And I said, "Oh, I don't want any more pictures. I don't like pictures that much." And then it was all of a sudden just us. And then there was a ring, and then we were engaged.
That was cool. That was nice.
It worked out well. And it was funny because the photographer, just like everyone else these days in their 20s, has jeans so tight that it doesn't hide very much these days. And so you could see the ring box in his pocket. So I'm like, well, I hope he doesn't pay attention to that, because I could see that ring from here. So, but it was entertaining, because then we took a couple of photos of just us, and Aaron was like, oh, we're done, right? And the photographer's like, nope, I think there's one more. And he hands me the box. I look at Aaron, and Aaron's like, what have you done? Like,
and of course, he had to bring the box because I needed a Tiffany ring. Yeah. So he had to prove it.
So you wanted to see the blue box. So it was
That's
good.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But we've had a lot of life changes at that event. We decided to buy our home in Sonoma because of that event. We decided to move there because of that. We got married at that event. So a lot of those things, because of the community involved with it, was why we actually feel very fortunate that a lot of our life moments were there as well.
And I don't think that we were expecting to get engaged and then get married so quickly right after, not for any particular reason, but I think we probably were both thinking we would be engaged about a year and then get married about a year later. But we had our 5-year anniversary was the same week that we got married in February, and it just sort of came to us that maybe that would be a good time to do it. And it was a really tight time schedule. I think we did the whole thing in about 4 months of planning, which is pretty tight for a wedding. Mm. But it just came together 50 days ago and was just perfect.
Yeah.
So was it a hard decision to marry, to make that choice to marry or no? And how has it been since you got married? Is it different living together?
I don't think it was a hard choice to get married. It's something we had talked about before. We knew it's something we wanted to do. it was kind of finding when the time was right for us. Mm-hmm. Primarily, we both have very stressful and demanding jobs where I work now really weird schedules, and I've been doing that for about the last year and a half. When we started dating, my schedule was very normal for the most part, other than called out in the middle of the night a few times a month. But now when you work Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, when those are typical social nights with friends and family, and you and your partner works Monday through Friday, we actually have no days off together. So we haven't had any official days off without a vacation day in a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to find times that worked well for us and that was accommodating for that. And then we kind of just decided that our anniversary was coming up, and if we can find a place that we liked that would shoot good photos, because we knew they had to be indoors, on that weekend, then we would do it. Mm-hmm. If we couldn't, then we would just do it over the summer sometime and figure out how that looked. And everything just kind of really fell into the place. Where we got married was wonderful. They kind of took care of a lot of the stress. A lot of the planning was during the fires, so they were able to take care of a lot of things and like let them deal with that. It was good. But since we've been married, there is a little bit of difference for me. I mean, it's not too different since we've been together 5 years. Doesn't change much, other than the fact that you now introduce your husband instead of your partner, and you go to the city to get benefits or things like that. And it's always
been a nice difference.
Yeah, and it's always a funny conversation when you go in there. I'm like, oh, I need to pick up benefits for my spouse, benefits packet, and like, oh, what's her name? Ooh. Yeah, and then they're immediately apologetic, and it's not on purpose, and it's not any bias. It's just a stereotype or what we're conditioned to believe, the default. But it's been nice because everyone in the city has been wonderful. My department's been wonderful. We had a table full of my coworkers at our wedding. Guys that I supervise currently were sending me text messages saying congratulations on my wedding day. So things like that that maybe outside you wouldn't believe would be the reality. But for us, it's been wonderful. And he's been to retirement parties for 5 years and holiday parties with me, and everyone knows about our relationship, so it's been good. And now to introduce him at work as a husband, that part is nice. You don't have to say boyfriend or partner or find a word that's going to make people feel more comfortable, because husband and wife is comfortable for everyone at that point. So that part's been really enjoyable.
How about for you, Aaron?
Well, to me, I think Chris just hit on it. Just the word husband, I don't think I appreciated before we were married the power of that word and being able to say that to and about Chris. It gives me a feeling of, you know, having arrived, that, you know, I didn't realize how important it was. I mean, I always knew it was important, and we always knew we would get married. Mm-hmm. I think from very soon after we met each other, we knew we would get married. But it does feel different. It feels special. It really does. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can relate. We went through the same thing when we got married. It's like we were together for so long, but to say that word, wife, at first it was very odd, right. And I didn't like the way it felt, because it seemed so, I don't know, joining the system in a way. Like,
sure.
I don't know. But then it got easier and easier and more comfortable, and now it's great. Yeah. I really can relate to what you're saying about that.
It made sense, you know.
It gives your relationship validity and value, and people see you differently, like you made that commitment.
Right.
You know, versus living together is a different kind of commitment.
Sure. And I think just the concept of saying the word boyfriend at a certain point, it just doesn't feel official enough, because, you know, we're more than that. We're partners. And so, but partner is also kind of an awkward word too. We have some funny stories about that, because, you know, in Chris's line of work as a police officer, partner has a meaning professionally.
Right.
In my line of work as an attorney, partner also means something. It means your law partner. So I've taken Chris before we were married to conferences, judicial legal conferences. and introduced him as my partner to judges or to other people, and they say, well, how long have you been at the firm, Chris? And then I say, judge, it's not that kind of partner. So I'm looking forward to taking Chris to the next conference and saying this is my husband, because everybody will get it.
Well, and it's funny too, because like at those conferences you kind of forget about that, the partner word, and by day two I didn't even think about it, and one of his judge colleagues walks over and he's like, oh, this is my partner, Chris. And he's like, oh, great. Does he work you too hard? And I was like, well, just when he doesn't want to do the dishes, I guess. I forgot that, oh, he meant the other kind of partner. So wrong kind of thing.
Oh, that's too funny.
That's great.
But no, it's been good. We were together about 6 months. We started dating in February, and then we got together exclusively starting in, I think, July 5th, actually. I think it was the day after the 4th of July. And it was only just more of those things. Like, I'm always afraid of those commitment words at first, because it's like, I think people rush into some of that really quickly, and that can cause strain. And so for us, it was like, nope, let's just enjoy this. We'll go on dates, see if we like spending time with each other, spend more and more time together. And then once you realize you actually aren't spending any time apart anymore, then it's like, oh, okay, wait, this... Yeah, okay, I get it. This is what we are, and we kind of let that part happen naturally.
Mm. And for the first, 3 years of our relationship, we actually lived in different cities. So I was in Sacramento, and Chris was living first in Petaluma and then in Santa Rosa. Mm. So in a sense, of course, distance is a challenge that that you overcome. But it also was really healthy for us, because I think both of us in previous relationships had been really quick to jump into things and get very serious very quickly, and that's not always a recipe for success. So this actually prevented us from moving too quickly, and I think we really clicked with each other, you know, just at the right pace for us, and everything happened at exactly the right time, and it just worked out perfectly for us.
Yeah.
And how long had you been single before then, Aaron? I'm curious.
Oh, I would say about a year, about a year before that. So I don't think I've never dated too much. I mean, I dated from time to time, but I wasn't a very active dater, I would say, before I met Chris.
So we'll learn a little bit more about those coming out stories in a bit, but I think it's time for a music break.
Right, and you both brought a song. Would you introduce it, and then we'll take a little break?
Yeah, this is a song. It was actually the first dance at our wedding. It's by Keith Urban. It's Making Memories of Us. For us, it was just kind of something that we talk about a lot of like, these are the memories we've made so far, but we continue to make memories and look forward to those future memories. And this song kind of just brings that idea in a better way of singing than I could do.
Enjoy.
I'm gonna be here for you, baby, and I'll be a man of my word. Speak the language in a voice that you have never heard. I wanna sleep with you forever, and I wanna die in your arms. In a cabin by a meadow where the wild bees swarm. And I'm gonna love you like nobody loves you. And I'll earn your trust making memories of us. I wanna honor your mother. I wanna learn from your paw. I wanna steal your attention like a bad outlaw. And I wanna stand out in a crowd for you, a man among men. I wanna make your world better than itself. Love From now on, this you know somehow. You've been stretched to the limits, but it's all right now. And I'm gonna make you this promise, if there's life after this, I'm gonna be there to meet you with a warm kiss. Yes, I am. And I'm gonna love you like nobody loves you. And I'll earn your trust making memories of us. Oh, I'm gonna love you like nobody loves you, baby.
And that was Making Memories of Us by Keith Urban. Aaron, you wanted to say something about the song.
Oh, just quickly. I think that we can all relate to how hard it is sometimes on Valentine's Day to find the perfect card for your same-gendered partner. Everything is always he and she. One of the things that's special to us about this song is we had to try and find a song for our wedding that didn't have any female pronouns in it. And that's actually really hard to do, to find a love song that's a sort of a mainstream song that would fit us and not be awkward with us up there for our first dance. And this actually fit it. It's a great song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good point.
It's a beautiful song. Thanks for bringing that song to us.
Yeah. And sharing it with us, because that was the first time I heard it, I think. Yeah. So, yeah, we promised the audience that we would talk about your coming out stories, if you have one. I know we all have something.
Yeah.
So, Chris, why don't you start? When did you know?
I figured it out when I was 15. Before that, I didn't really know. I was like almost hitting a brick wall when I was 15. And I came out when I was 16, almost 17. I was a junior in high school. I told my mom at her best friend's house at the time. And I remember it was almost an argument that didn't really need to be an argument, but probably my fault for escalating it to that point. And she made some comment, my mom, about, I think it was relationships or girlfriends or something. I don't really remember. And I was like, well, that's not for me because I'm different. And she's like, well, what do you mean different? I'm like, well, just different. Leave it alone. And she's like, well, no, what do you mean different? I'm like, well, I'm gay. And she's like, what? And I was like, well, I'm gay. And then I remember her first remark was like, oh, I should make sure I start locking my closets. And I was like, well,
really?
I wasn't really into your clothes. But that's just a mom thing, and you get it. And you, and a parent thing when you first come out, and I get it. And that was hard. I was their firstborn, so that was different for them. I had two younger brothers. I still do. And then my dad was always seemed as more of the conservative one growing up, more the hardliner kind of on things. And so a couple weeks later, I had told my dad, but he had already known. And ironically enough, he was getting ready to go bowling. and so I go into his room to go talk to him, to tell him. And I had never seen my dad cry before that point, but he started to cry and said, hey, I still love you no matter what. I think it's a phase, but if you want to be around those people, it's okay. And if you want to have those people over, just tell me. And I'm going to go out for a little bit, but I'm not going to say no. And for some people, they were like, well, that didn't seem really accepting. But for him, that was a big move. He was accommodating, so to speak, his life to let me still live mine. And then ever since then, he became a big champion for me. My mom had a little bit of a harder time up in the beginning with it. I brought a man to prom with me, and my mom had a bit of a hard time at that time for it. I paid for everything for my date and myself, and the only thing I couldn't afford were pictures. I was like running out of money at 17 years old or whatever I was. And
wow, courageous.
It was hard, but it was good.
Was this Petaluma High School?
Casa Grande High School.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what year was this?
2001. So it was good, but my dad found out that I didn't have money, and I woke up the next morning to a check on my desk in my room to cover pictures. And then ultimately, they were great. My mom has been a big advocate for LGBT people. I think just in the beginning it was a little tricky for her, but a little harder than I had anticipated, and probably for herself as well. Mm-hmm. But now she's a huge ally for the LGBT community and things like that. My dad was just a surprise from the beginning about it. He's now passed away 6 years ago this month, or last month. Oh, thank you. It's okay. But it's been nice, like, my parents being so accepting. My mom calls Aaron's son and looks at him that way. So, well, in the beginning, it was hard, like it was for a lot of people. Mm. It ended up being very good and rewarding in the end for our family. So,
You know, Aaron?
I think for me, it was, you know, somewhat similar, I would say. This was, I think, in 1998 that I came out, and I was probably, I think I was 17 years old, junior in high school in Rockland. I think my parents were fine. You know, it didn't go well to start, but I think there's not a whole lot of people that can say that it's just fine right off the bat. So my parents were always pretty liberal, and I guess I thought they would be just maybe a little bit more okay with it than they were at that moment. So it took, you know, it was a process, and the place where I grew up is a small, very conservative city, but I don't recall losing any friends in high school. I had one friend who actually told me that his mom told him not to hang out with me, you know, after I came out. But he did anyway, you know, he defied her. So, you know, it was just fine. And you know, it was a year or two of, I would say, some tension. One of my parents took it better than the other one, and I won't say which one that was and wasn't, but they know. And then it was fine after that. I think, you know, I went away to college, and by my freshman year of college, everything was just fine. And my parents have always been so supportive of me in really different ways. You know, my dad is very quiet, but very proud of all of his kids. I have two younger sisters, so he's very proud of both of us. And my mother has always been much more outgoing and vocally, you know, very supportive of us. And just after that little period of tension in the beginning, it was just right back to normal. And our parents like each other, so that's good.
That's good.
Nice. So what about your siblings? And your siblings, Chris, Aaron, why don't you go ahead and continue? How are they with you? And
totally fine. They're my biggest cheerleaders. They always have been. That's never been remotely an issue with either one of them. It's been just fine.
Are you close? Are they local? Or are they in the Sacramento area?
My middle sister, my second sister, is in Rockland. She lives in Rockland. And my youngest sister, Chelsea, lives in Los Angeles with her husband, and she followed a dream to go in the music business, and she's been in the artist management side of things down there and making a name for herself, and she's doing a great job down there. So all of us have done good things, and I'm really proud of them, and they're proud of me, so it's been great.
Wonderful. What about you, Chris, your younger brothers?
Yeah, I have two younger brothers, very similar kind of structure as Aaron's lifestyle is, but one lives in Sacramento, and him and I are really, really close. We talk several times a week. My youngest brother lives in Petaluma. We still talk. He's got my niece, and she's beautiful. I think the only joke about it way back in the day was my middle brother and I always were fighting when we were younger. Now we're like the best of friends as adults, which tends to happen, I think. And my youngest brother, when I initially came out, my parents didn't want him to know. And so it was probably about a year or so when we finally had that conversation, and he looked at my mom and dad, and he was just so mad. He's like, well, how come nobody told me? And he's always been great. Both my brothers have always been good about it, never had a problem, and they're excited to be at the wedding, and they were part of the wedding, and they were very grateful to be part of the wedding as well. So it was good.
Wonderful. Do they know how great a bowler you are?
My middle brother and I, we were a doubles team, and so we went to when we were kids, we went to Reno for tournaments and stuff like that.
So you're really good beforehand.
Well, no, we can't tell that because I might get voted out of the league. So I never bowled before. No.
He's a ringer.
No,
I mean a ringer for sure. No wonder you.
Yeah, we used to do it as kids.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and our random weird story, but years and years and years ago when I was in my early 20s or mid-20s, I was in a bar in San Francisco, and all of a sudden I hear someone say my name. I look over, and it was a guy who grew up in Petaluma. We used to bowl against him all the time, who is also now open and gay, and actually friends with Aaron in Sacramento, and he's friends with him. It was like these random weird, it was like our whole little junior bowling league ended up being a whole bunch of little gay guys as well, so it was pretty funny.
That's too funny when you reconnect with someone from your past. I have somebody like that too, and who's actually listening and who's going to be on the radio next month. Faith and Connie, they're going to be our guests next month, and they have quite a story to tell as well.
Oh, that's terrific. Awesome. Can't wait to hear that.
Yeah. So I don't know, people reconnect. Maybe you see them, or maybe you connect on Facebook or something. Yep. It's pretty amazing how the world turns. So I was curious if we could steer the conversation a little bit towards your community work. Chris, you had talked about how important it was that you meet someone who would be really part of your life in your community outreach. And I was curious about if you could tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, community work has always been a big part of my life. I really think it's important to kind of give back when you can. And a lot of times that gets taken in different contexts. People think giving back means you have to put money out into the world mm-hmm. to be able to do something. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite the opposite. I think I really started getting involved when I was in my early to mid-20s, and I was at San Francisco's Pride, and there was actually an HIV booth, and they were just looking for donations and things like that. And so I was like, oh, I'll give a 20 or whatever I had in my pocket. And I'm like, well, why don't you actually become part of one of our surveys? And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to give money. Like, and they're like, no, why don't you just come meet with us on a Monday and be part of this? And I was like, all right, I'll come Monday. I didn't work that day. Sure. So I drove down and met with, it was like public health through this, it was San Francisco Public Health, but it was one of their HIV divisions. And they were looking for HIV negative men, if I can get that out right, to work on some different surveys and studies of different things. And something that I went for one meeting ended up being 5 years to be part of something.
Wow.
And it got me to learn about something that I was really naive and somewhat ignorant about. Mm. And so it was interesting meeting people with different stories and different things and being able to learn about something that I really just genuinely should have known more about and didn't. So then from there, I was like, well, I'm enjoying this part of it, and I'm enjoying being part of these things. So I got part of, or was one of the commissioners on the Sonoma County Human Rights Commission. I was part of that for about 2 years and enjoyed that work with them and a lot of diverse work. And so it was very enjoyable. And then from there, I got contacted by Rick Dean, who's the executive director of Face to Face in Santa Rosa. And Rick asked if I would join their board. And I've now been on their board 3 or 4 years. I should probably know the answer to that. But I'm now their board president. And through some of their other things, I go out with some of their other activities for some education and prevention work that they do, just because I enjoy doing that. Mm-hmm. And it's just been very enjoyable to go out in the community, talk about things that you like, and being able to tell people about something they didn't know existed in their backyard. A lot of things in Sonoma County, especially for LGBT people, people feel like we have to go to San Francisco or even Sacramento to really participate in community things or to find a community or just services that are specific towards our community, and being able to show people that, no, those services actually exist here is wonderful. Also, a big part of it for me is really kind of getting the police department involved with other services that reach other community groups that may be sometimes apprehensive towards law enforcement or not understanding what they do. So being able to go out in those communities and represent not only my agency, but my LGBT community, and kind of bringing those together and recognizing there is that partnership there that sometimes people don't know, I value that significantly as well. So that's some of the
reason. So as you, when you go out to these different places, I don't know where, you could tell us and share that, but as face-to-face with the hat on, as face-to-face president, so you're not in uniform. You're not coming as a sergeant.
Right. So yeah, because there are some places that we go that that aren't typically places that for law enforcement would do outreach in when it comes to public health things. It's just not within my role for the police department. Mm-hmm. But as a community person, I find that within things that I want to be doing and should be doing and feel like I need to be doing. And so face-to-face is a good outlet for that. Mm-hmm. And so some of my experience with work is beneficial with face-to-face, because I know certain places that we can do some outreach that need information about HIV testing or needle exchange or other things. So I can help participate in those areas and get more involved. And then as an officer, it's nice because I can bring that information back that I learned from the community side of things. So when you're talking to officers and training officers about whatever it may be, you have another side of that story, not just one element that's a perceived, whether it comes from news outlets or from what you're trained. You have that real human connection that can kind of educate other officers about how to really connect with people. And that's what I value quite a bit, being able to take those experiences on both sides and use them both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Aaron, do you do community work as well up where you work in Sacramento? Or
I do. So one of the things that Chris said earlier really struck a chord with me. You know, I think that we both have inspired each other to become more involved from a community service perspective. I think we were both involved before in the things that we did, but we've kind of helped support each other to kind of take it to the next level. So Chris is just absolutely rocking face-to-face, and that makes me so proud to see all the work he's doing there. And he really inspired me to get involved with Equality California. And so I've been on the board of advisors for Equality California for probably three or four years now. And it's a really interesting organization, because it's got its fingers in all kinds of different little issues around the state. And it's a statewide group. It's the largest statewide LGBT group in the country. And so when I get on, you know, conference calls with other board of advisor members, there's people on the call from every city in the state, you know, LA, Palm Springs, San Diego, and San Francisco, Sacramento. So it's been a great opportunity to meet other leaders, business leaders, community activists, leaders, politicians, people that are really making a difference in the state. So my role, everybody sort of does with Equality California what they're best suited to. Yeah. It works for me to be involved with the numbers. So, my service is I'm on the finance committee for Equality California. I look at the budget, sort of dry stuff, but it's important to make a large statewide group like that work. So that's one aspect of my service. The other is that I'm on the host committee of the Equality California Sacramento Equality Awards. So one of the biggest fundraising activities that EQCA does every year is they host Equality Awards in the major cities. So San Francisco, LA, San Diego, Palm Springs, and Sacramento. In Sacramento, we bring on sponsors and help get the word out about the event. Actually, this year's event is on April 10th, and the state attorney general will be there. We're really excited about that.
You mean in just 9 days?
Yes, yes, it's coming up. So luckily, I just raised money. I don't have to actually plan the logistics of the event, so that's good. But I've really enjoyed my time there, and I think I'll probably do that for – I actually just got reappointed to another two-year term, so probably another 2 years.
Wow. So you both are really involved in community building and supporting the community, and then your jobs, and then your relationship.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have any dogs or cats or anything?
No.
I was going to say.
We don't have time to take care of anything other than each other.
Yeah. We're not home enough to really be able to support another life.
Not right now. Right.
Yeah. And so we wanted to know about passions and fun. And I know, Chris, you're all about the bowling. At least that gives you a lot of fun and laughter. And you get to let it release all that.
A little tension and stress and stuff. Together, I mean, we do like to go out and have fun. We like to go a lot of doing wine tasting and enjoy those things. We do enjoy traveling quite a bit. Basketball for me is a huge passion. The Spurs destroyed Houston tonight, so it made me very happy to wake up to go to work. But that was a big part of our relationship too, is how we met. We started going to basketball games, the beginning of our relationship.
I think that's both how we knew that we were the ones for each other, is we both just a couple weeks after we met each other was some playoff series in Oakland, and we got tickets to go see the Warriors in San Antonio play each other. And it just, we knew at that moment.
Mm-hmm. And it was good. But like our favorite things to do, especially together, are like game nights with our friends.
Nice.
We just had one. I finally had a Friday off 2 weeks ago. So we had about 12 people over our house and we made dinner and played board games and had wine. And that's a lot of the kind of things that we enjoy doing. A big part of it too is we love living in Sonoma because that community there is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. On Fridays, there's a happy hour that people just pop over to. There's no arranging of it. It just happens to be there. Or there's a dinner party somewhere, or there's something always seeming to happen. Mm-hmm. So that's really how we kind of enjoy and tie up our time. I grew up living in a town of about 60,000 people. His town grew to about 60,000 people. He moved to a town of about 400,000, and I moved to a town of about 175. And we're busier now in a town of 10,600 people than we ever were any other time in our lives. Mm-hmm. So it's been good.
I'm very curious, before we have to have our closing part of our show, I'm curious what board games you play.
Cards Against Humanity.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Those are apples to apples, or a lot of those kind of fun joint games we enjoy quite a bit. A lot of card games as well. So
Yeah.
Chris is better at cards than me, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing your lives with us. We got a lot in a very short time.
Good.
I'm still have this burning question, though. I'm curious because we didn't tap on Chris, because I know you from being in the bowling league, right? What would make you want to become a police officer? I didn't get that.
When I was a kid, I was always big on wanting to do something for the community, and it's very cliche sounding, but I always wanted to make my community better. But I also wanted to give people a good police story, because every time you hear about a police story, it's often not always that it's negative, but it's like, oh, I got stopped last week for this or that or something else. And people are going to get stopped. People are going to get tickets. It's just the way it is. It doesn't mean that experience had to be negative. But I really didn't think that gay and lesbian people could be police officers. And so I was working as a bank teller, and I met a police officer, and he's like, hey, come on a ride along with me. I said, sure. So I did. And then I just really found a community for it. I knew a couple of other people at that point who were gay males, who were police officers in different agencies. And I was like, well, if I can do it, I can give it a try. And so I put in, and the process is very long. It took 6 months from the date you apply to if you get hired. It's very stressful and everything else. And I remember thinking, oh, okay, I can do this. And so I got there, and I looked around, and it was the only one of me like there that was there. And so that part was weird in itself, but the place that I worked was just wonderful, the way they treated me and brought me in, the things I've been able to do as because of my skills and because of my work ethic and everything else has been wonderful. And just because I was a gay male, that never seemed to benefit me or hinder me in my career. And that to me is the sign of a good agency, not something who just provides you with an opportunity because you're different or prevents you from an opportunity because you're different. There, it's just strictly based on your work ethic and your work product. And I've always enjoyed that. And for me, it's just being able to be part of that. I'm a really big community advocate, even in work, and I get to do all these different things. And I really appreciate the fact they let me go out in the community and do a lot of the stuff they let me do. And that's what I like about my agency. They're very community oriented. So all my passions as I got younger, I was able to carry into doing now. And so very grateful for that.
Well, what is it that you would like people to know? We do have to leave, unfortunately. What is it, some words of wisdom that you might have for anybody who's listening out there? Chris,
I think for us in our life, whether it's independent because of our jobs or as a couple, it really has been just communication and communicating with one another, even when it's topics that you know are just going to be sometimes upsetting or difficult to talk about. Being able to talk to one another and have that open line of communication is important. Like I said, we actually have no days off together right now because of our work schedules. So if we don't communicate and try and spend that time together when we can, it really would break things down, both professionally and romantically for us. So for us, that's been a huge component of constantly staying in touch with each other, making sure we're checking in, and not just like, hey, how's your day, but hey, is everything okay? Am I pulling my weight around the house? Like, what do you need? And if I'm not, being held accountable to that standard too, which is important for us.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Aaron, what do you have any words of wisdom, Aaron?
Well, not surprisingly, I agree with Chris. communication is really key. You know, the other thing is making time for each other, mm-hmm. especially with the way our schedules are right now. It hasn't always been that way for us, and it will be back to a normal schedule again. Appreciating the time that we have together, finding and carving out downtime to be just together is really important.
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. And it's just become, it's very, very important. And, you know, as people grow into their relationships and years go by, they get real comfortable with, you know, going to work, coming home, turning on the TV, and mm-hmm. that's what they do. And so it's really refreshing to hear that you both, you know, feel so strongly that communication and spending time together is so important, because it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or bowling. That also
or
helps.
Bowling. No. We're cheering for bowling.
Yeah.
Making time, yeah.
Supporting your spouse in what they love to do is so important, you know. Mm-hmm. You get your strike, and probably the first person you're looking at, right?
Right.
Aaron, like, oh, I just got a strike.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, it's been really a pleasure to have you both. Thanks
great.
For saying yes.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having us. Wonderful.
It's been terrific.
Yes. Good.
So we want to say goodbye to everyone and want to say that, remember, like Aaron and Chris, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month with our guests, Faith and Connie. Until then,
good night.
Tune in next Sunday night for Outbeat Music. That'll be at 8 p.m. and only here on KRCB-FM Radio 91. And don't forget, as you heard in tonight's Outbeat News segment, the Sonoma Department of Health Services is partnering with Face to Face to host a special syphilis testing event. You can get tested and treated on the spot. And of course, while you're there, you can get an HIV test and an hepatitis C test. It's all free, and it's happening this Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 12 noon to 4:30 p.m. at Face to Face. That's at 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. On air, online, or on the go, you're listening to Radio 91, 91.1 KRCB-FM Windsor, and 90.9 K215CQ Santa Rosa. It is just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Afropop is next.
Change, yeah. So do it today, yeah. 'Cause I can see your